Great. My name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. Great to see so much conversation in the chat this morning. A few reminders before we get started. All upcoming professional development offerings are available on our webpage at nysrti.org. A copy of today's PowerPoint and handouts are available on the webpage. I did post the link directly in the chat for those of you who want to go out and grab that information. Just use the link. It'll take you right to it. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we'll post a link to a brief evaluation. If you could take a few minutes to complete that, we do send it via email after the webinar as well. But we look at that feedback every week, so we appreciate you taking that minute or two to fill that out. We're very pleased to have Dr. Catherine Stahl with us today to present our first webinar in our Strand 18 series, Developing Reading Comprehension for Children in Pre-Kindergarten to Grade 2 at Tier 1 or Core Instruction. Today's topic, Read Alouds on Steroids, Enhancing Comprehension Development. Dr. Stahl is a clinical professor of literacy at New York University. Dr. Stahl studies the effective instruction of reading in the elementary years. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic. For over 25 years, Stahl taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. The questions that she researches stem from those experiences and from current classroom observations. Her research examines reading acquisition and reading comprehension. Dr. Stahl has written 5 books related to literacy instruction. She earned her Ed.D. in reading education from the University of Georgia in 2003. And at this time, it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Stahl.
Thank you, Molly. It is great to be here, and welcome to all of you. It's so wonderful to see the names of some of my familiar friends who have been here with some of the other webinars, as well as lots of new folks. This is really going to be a wonderful webinar series, and I'm so glad that some of you are here, even as members of school teams. Now, Molly, one of the things that I'm not seeing here that I usually see is the list. Okay, there it goes. There it goes. So I guess the screen just had a change. Okay, so we're going to have a wonderful series. And so Molly told you a little bit about me, but I would like to find out who the members are in our audience. And for those of you who are new, basically you just click what your role is at your school, and I'll be able to see on the poll, who we actually have with us today. Oh, I'm loving it. I'm seeing so many classroom teachers. The last webinar series I did that was comprehension in grades 3 through 6, the majority of our participants were interventionists and even a few district people. So I'm so glad to see a nice number of classroom teachers who I think will really benefit so much from this topic that is really my heart and soul and is really my passion. And I think is often not really spoken about enough. Early comprehension instruction in pre-K, K1 and 2. Okay, and so next, I'm going to go to the next slide. So I see that we have lots of classroom teachers. And, Molly, can I see that again? Is it too late for me to see? I was so distracted by all the classroom teachers that I didn't see the bottom part. Okay, great. Oh, and an L teacher. Wow, we have a fabulous mix today. Okay, Molly, thanks. All right. So now the next level, for those of you who are classroom teachers or even interventionists or special ed teachers who just work with particular grades, let me know who you actually are working with. There is a category at the bottom, you know, for somebody like an interventionist or a special ed teacher or a principal administrator who's working with everybody or multiple grades. So nice. Again, we have a very nice, pretty even mix in this category. Okay, so thank you. And now we'll continue to look at our agenda. Okay, so we have a very full agenda this afternoon. First, we're going to start by talking about some developmental and theoretical considerations that actually make the comprehension of young children a different ballgame. And so, it really is you know, most of the research has been done in the intermediate grades, and there is, you know, now there is more research related to comprehension, but often it comes from the School of Educational Psychology and Speech and Language. So, you know, we're really looking at, you know, the developmental and theoretical considerations because of our young children are a very special population related to comprehension. Then we'll look at some actual instructional protocols for read alouds. And then we'll really explore what I talk about when I say reading on steroids. I mean that beyond the read aloud, Rebecca Silverman did a very interesting article or a very interesting research project where she was actually looking at read alouds, the power of the read aloud alone, and then comparing it to classrooms who went beyond the read aloud and did some extension activities. And the difference she found was really where children really gained the growth in both vocabulary and comprehension and language abilities was really happening in those classrooms that went beyond the real read aloud and did extension activities. And so we'll talk about some ways that you can do that that are manageable for a classroom teacher. And then the ever important crafting the best questions, because that is such a powerful part of nurturing and expanding student comprehension and getting to the heart of it. Okay, now to learn more, in an hour, I'll go pretty quickly in this hour. I can talk pretty quickly. But if you want more detailed information that really covers all three webinars and beyond, I would say, so, you know, all of what I'm talking about today is from my book, Developing Reading Comprehension, which is part of the Early Literacy Series by, that's produced by Guilford and available on Amazon. And the book also, if you're working with English language learners, we're not going to focus on that quite so much in these webinars, but Georgia Garcia, who was my co-author, is really one of the national experts on English language learners. So not only do we focus on developing reading comprehension in the classrooms with, typically developing children and all economic levels, but we have lots of sections in each chapter on how to accommodate the English language learner. And also a free guide that I really recommend that anyone working in the K-3, it's a little teacher-friendly guide, maybe 30 pages with lots of graphics. It's the IES guide, Improving Reading Comprehension in K-3 Third Grade. And you can actually just you can put that website in, or you can just Google IES Reading Comprehension Guide, and it'll show up, and you can download it as a PDF. A very useful little easy guide. And it gives you a lot of research as well that you can look into if you want to read the original articles, if you really want to dig more deeply. Okay, so let's get started with developmental considerations in pre-K to grade 2. Is that the number one consideration is that we have to recognize that comprehension is built upon and reliant upon oral language development. And so the more we can talk to kids in those pre-K, kindergarten settings, have lots of conversation going on with adults as well as kids with each other, that's really what we want to encourage, and helping parents to engage in conversation with their kids as well. And the kind of conversation that tends to be found to be most useful and to really influence comprehension the most is what we call decontextualized conversation around decontextualized experiences. And by decontextualized, we mean what is happening not here, not now, in another context. So anytime you're having that conversation around the dinner table about what you did in school today, it's not here, it's not now. Or even, when you visited Daddy over the weekend, what are some things you and Daddy did together? All right, getting the child to talk about something that is not here and now. Most of the conversation that does happen in families often revolves around what's happening here now, like let's set the table, it's time for the bath, tasks around the house. management around the house and managing a child behavior and observations and what's happening here and now. And children being able to interpret and comprehend what's happening through our gestures, through hands-on experiences. But if we want children to excel in comprehension, we have to, before text ever enters the picture, we have to give them experience in these verbalizing and also understanding language that we express in what is not here, not now. We also have to remember that these are babies. These children are limited in amount of attention they can extend, the number of experiences they've had, and their working memory. And so those are all important considerations in any kind of comprehension building. Those of you who are working in pre-K and K and even grade one and also two, we have research, lots of research, that says that comprehension of stories on video and also that children have listened to, that have been presented as teacher read aloud, stories that have been presented orally as a book or even storytelling, that these serve, how they comprehend those are strong indicators of later reading comprehension. And so therefore, we want to engage kids in the same kind of activities that we see happening in second grade, third grade, fourth grade in comprehending text. We want to engage kids in those same kind of questioning and retelling that in when they're engaging with videos. You know, and now with technology, we have videos, stores and stores of videos that are quite short, that are available to us and are very entertaining to children. And they can also be like fairy tales. You know, I know on YouTube, there are wonderful, wonderful 6-minute YouTube things, or also the old reading rainbows are now all on YouTube and accessible on video. They are wonderful things to use to begin to some really strategic comprehension instruction among our youngest children. And we also have lots and lots of research that as young as age 4, young children demonstrate many of the same comprehension abilities, including inference generation processes, as much more sophisticated readers. And so therefore, they may need, for example, they might be retelling a story to you that you had read to them. They may not generate those inferences spontaneously in any kind of retelling, but we have lots of research evidence that children can make very high-level inferences, even in terms of characters' motivations and empathy, and that they are capable of doing that if we simply ask those kinds of questions. And this can be around a video as well as around a read aloud. And we encourage you to do that because it is much easier to intervene and identify if these comprehension problems or challenges are occurring before the decoding piece ever makes things murky. And so, you know, we really want to provide kids with lots of experiences in those ways very early on. Now, theoretical considerations. Most research, as I said, most of the research that does investigate the comprehension of young children has been built around narratives, all right? That doesn't mean that we shouldn't begin to incorporate informational expository text. We absolutely should. Poetry, we absolutely should, because that's also, the poetry is also going to enhance phonological awareness at this stage, and we want to do that. But most of the research related to the actual comprehension piece among 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds has been done around narratives. And it's based on those kinds of oral and video things rather than, you know, of course, the children aren't reading the text themselves. And it, now most work on actual reading comprehension of children reading has not necessarily been done in first and second grade, but it has been done mostly in grades 3 through 6. However, when working with kids in grades K through 2, this is huge. This is huge. We have to assess both listening and reading comprehension to get a true picture of comprehension. I work with a lot of schools, and I have my own, you know, I have my students in my classes here at NYU. And I often hear them or hear teachers tell me, I didn't move a child up to the next level because they couldn't answer the questions, or they couldn't, they have comprehension problems. We can't make that judgment unless we have previously given a child a listening comprehension task. A child who is reading a little level D or E book or a little F book, if they can't do a retelling or answer some comprehension questions of those simplistic texts, we need to not jump to the conclusion that they've got a comprehension problem. Instead, we need to step back and really look at their how their listening comprehension is. What's the health of their listening comprehension? How do they do with narratives that they have heard? How do they do with a wordless picture book? Can they construct a narrative? And so those are the things that we have to be very wary of, and we have to be very aware of theoretically. Also, in these lower grades, word recognition abilities are still under construction throughout about grade 4 or 5. And so the kids don't really reach a plateau in fluency and automaticity until they're around 5th grade. What that means in terms of comprehension is that means until about 4th or 5th grade, the level of automaticity is really taking up cognitive space, a larger amount of cognitive space than it is going to be for older children who have reached that plateau of reading 130 words a minute, 150 words a minute. Before that, the word work and the lack of automaticity is compromising some of the cognitive space. And we have to be aware of that when we're working with young children. And therefore, what that also means, and we may not like to hear this, we may believe, well, I don't believe in that because there doesn't seem to be strong face validity. But the true reality is that fluency and reading comprehension are strongly correlated in grades 1 through 3. We can't deny that. And so therefore, now over time, that's going to decrease. That correlation decreases when we get into grades 4 and grade 5, all right? But there is a strong correlation in the younger grades that we just have to honestly acknowledge, all right, regarding reading comprehension. And therefore, especially if you're talking about something like an RTI model, therefore, up through about, you know, through those grades, the words correct per minute is not the worst, you know, it's not really a bad progress monitoring measure, all right, because there's not really much else. There's not much else. So, no, you don't want to use that exclusively. You want to be doing a lot of other things in comprehension, and we're going to talk about why on the next slide. But don't discard or poo-poo the value of the words correct per minute. And so the other reason why we do not have there is no one single clean measure of comprehension. It does not exist. And so therefore, because unlike something like phonics and fluency, we have to acknowledge Scott Paris's constrained skills theory. And so what that means is that phonics is very constrained skill, all right? There's a narrow span of time when kids are learning something. There's a constrained set of items at which you're testing. If you want to know whether a kid can do, if you want to know whether a kid knows how to write their name, you say to the kid, write your name, and you can see it right there. He can either do it or he can't. He can't do it, and then there's a ceiling when all the kids can do it. All right? Fluency, not so much. There's a longer growth period. But when we start talking about vocabulary and comprehension, they are at the far end of the continuum of being unconstrained skills. And this is important because those constrained abilities like phonics develop in a very linear manner. And the children will develop mastery over a few years. They're easy to assess. That's why often more emphasis is placed on them in the primary grades and why more emphasis is placed on them in intervention settings, because it's easier to test them. Unconstrained abilities are multidimensional, incremental, context dependent, and they develop across a lifetime. That's why we've got to begin working on it from the womb, you know, reading to the kids when they're babies. So this comprehension is constantly developing, and it's never all or nothing. And so there's not one assessment that is going to give you a silver bullet gauge of what a comprehension score is. There is no such thing as a comprehension score that tells you about a child's reading. It does not exist. You must, in order to analyze comprehension, you have got to use multiple measures. And at the grade levels that we are talking about, you must have a measure of listening comprehension before you can draw any kind of conclusion about a child's comprehension at this developmental stage. Context, purpose, genre, and content. Comprehension is difficult to assess and difficult to teach because you've got moving targets, all right? You've got different kinds of context. A kid can do something in a class and with a teacher and with a partner that they might not be able to do by themselves. They can do more if there's a specific purpose. Read to fill out this template. They can do that, whereas they might not be able to read the whole text and reconstruct it. Genre, expository is always going to be more difficult than narrative, and also the content. Some content, scientific content, may be likely to be more difficult than, say, something like a narrative where there's a personal experience involved. And then we have student factors, like a child's, once we get into learning how to decode, decoding, fluency, vocabulary. This third bullet is student factors. Prior knowledge, how much knowledge a child has about what they're reading. Metacognition, their ability to think about what they're thinking. Does this make sense? What can I do to fix it? Working memory, which is developing still with these young children, and self-regulation. These are all things that interact to result in wide ranges of comprehension. What we do know is that a comprehension program in any grade must consider what you see on this graph. We have our outer circle, which is always happening. We have to have engaging content. If you're going to really teach comprehension, you've got to do it in thematic units, because you've got to be building knowledge. Comprehension is in service to building knowledge, and the sustained attention to a theme is what builds excitement and motivation, in addition to building the background knowledge and words, vocabulary, that children need to understand a piece of text or a video. And there needs to be various levels of scaffolding with lots of good conversation around it, different levels of it, using the discourse of what we're talking about. If we're reading an informational text, we're looking at it with the eyes of a scientist. If we're reading a narrative, we're looking at the eyes as a human experience and as a literary critic. And so that's part of the discourse. Then we have, instructionally, is that middle circle. We have to have comprehension strategy and regulation instruction. There has to be questioning and discussion. We have to constantly be building and providing multiple exposures so that there can be that incremental vocabulary development among all children. And we cannot separate the talk and the writing from comprehension, because the only way we know what anyone has comprehended is by what they say and by what they write. And by what, when we read what others have written and listen to what others have said, that exchange is what also expands comprehension. It does not happen in isolation. Now we are going to take a little self-assessment poll. I would like you to take just 1 minute on your handout to look at this survey and about your own literacy instruction or about the instruction of those that you supervise. If you are a teacher, you need to do this, please, about yourself, not about the other teachers on your team or the teachers. If you're an interventionist, not about who you're looking at, but about your personal comprehension instruction. If you are an administrator or a district person, then you should be doing it about the people you're responsible for. So let's take a look. Do this on your worksheet first, and then we're going to do it as a poll, and let's take a look at what we've all said. So I'm seeing, okay, so good. So the answers are coming in. And I really appreciate your honesty on this. I don't know who you are. It's anonymous. So I have no idea who's filling in what. And I wouldn't even know if I see lots of familiar names, but I'm not going to be reporting to the comprehension police if you're not doing everything that the IES book says you should. So no one's reporting this to the comprehension police, so please be honest. Comprehension occurs in a content-driven context. That means in pre-K, K, one, or second grade, when you are teaching comprehension, it's a part of a bigger unit. Like your 90 minutes of literacy has to do with, oh, now we're doing our plant unit. And what I'm doing as my read aloud is related to plants. What you are reading is related to plants. My comprehension strategy instruction is based on my plant unit. And so I'm teaching a lot of informational text kind of skills. That's what that means, content driven. It means it's based on a whole unit. Now, comprehension, let's take a look at this. Comprehension dominates my literacy block. Judge Judy, who I love, I watch her every night when I'm relaxing in the evening to try to unwind. Judge Judy would say, this is a yes-no question. That means we shouldn't have some. Comprehension is either it's either more minutes than decoding or it's not. When you think about the number of minutes that you're spending on comprehension instruction during that 90 minutes of literacy is more of the time. If you have 90 minutes, then to say yes, that means that 50 minutes or more of your block must be comprehension. Okay. So we see, I'm very happy to see so many people using a content-driven context, because we do know that that really is effective. And I appreciate the people who say, yes, it is some, because I would say that in a lot of the classrooms I see, it doesn't exist at all in the lower grades in terms of when they're teaching content we do science and social studies in the afternoon, but when we teach comprehension in the morning, it's around a read aloud that I like. So I'm glad to see so much content. And I think the Common Core for that. I think that the Common Core has really made us, that's part of what I celebrate about the Common Core, is I think that it has really brought comprehension to the forefront in the primary grades. Hallelujah. And it has also made that building of world knowledge also to the forefront. So I think that we do in the primary grades, I think we are having all, you know, valuing the science instruction, the social studies instruction, and the literary instruction as all being of equal value when we're teaching kids how to read. Good. Okay. And so I see large in groups, small group discussions about text occurring daily. That's fantastic because conversation is so important. Okay, so Molly, we can now go to the last three. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of good influences from the Common Core in some of these responses because I just think that, say, 6 years ago, we didn't value comprehension as much in the primary grades, and I think we can only benefit from it. Okay. So as I said on a couple slides ago, that writing, the only way that we know what children comprehend. We're not having MRIs looking inside their brains to see what they've understood. And so therefore, we have to teach them how to have a conversation and how to express themselves about each different kind of text. What do we value as evidence? So for example, what we value in a narrative as evidence is not the same as what we value and how we talk about an informational text. And the talk has to be different. And certainly the writing has to be different as well. And we cannot have comprehension instruction without explicit instruction in how to talk about text and explicit instruction at the whole group level, at the modeling level, at the small group level, before we ever get to the individual level. That all has to happen. And explicit sustained strategy instruction has to occur across a unit, all right? So that if we are, like everyone said that they were doing those content units, and, you know, we had a preponderance of that. So we want to pick, say, two strategies that really will help kids overcome the meaning-making hurdles and really focus on that over those kinds of texts. And provide the explicit instruction, the modeling, and that gradual release of responsibility across that. So, you know, because that's how children acquire strategies in flexible ways also, and can learn it across time. So thank you, Molly. I think we're ready to go to the next slide. So this is very informative, and I hope this was a way that really got you thinking about what's happening in your own comprehension instruction. And as we spoke about, we need to have that gradual release of responsibility. And the gradual release of responsibility, I actually was at a conference this summer, and I heard David Pearson talking about his gradual release of responsibility. And what really struck me is, you know, he said so often we hear that I do it up here where it's at the top, where it's the explicit instruction, and then there's teacher modeling as well as student modeling, and then there's guided practice, maybe in a small group setting where the kids are actually practicing with immediate feedback from teacher in a small group setting, you know, which sometimes teachers call we do, and then the I do. He said I don't think that those three phrases really reflect what we had in mind when we were talking, when we talk about the gradual release of responsibility. It's more or less a dance going, you're sliding up and down that line all the time. And particularly when we talk about comprehension, because the text is changing, the context is changing. So all those moving parts that were the pressure points that were on a couple slides ago, those things are changing. And as they change and present more or less challenge to kids, we are having to dance and slide up and down that gradual release of responsibility. We also have classroom structures that will help us support it. And so the classroom structures that help us support the gradual release of responsibility, the teacher read aloud, which is what we're talking about today, share, this is where we're providing the most support. So we're going to have the most complex text here. And our focus is always comprehension or vocabulary. In the upcoming weeks, next week, we're going to be talking about shared reading and guided reading. And so we will focus on these two things and comprehension next week. Today, we're talking only about complex text during the teacher read aloud and how our main focus that we need to keep in mind, even in second grade, is comprehension and vocabulary for that teacher read aloud. Now we're moving into our second bullet related to research-based protocols. We know certain things must happen in a teacher read aloud to maximize their effectiveness. I know, I go in classrooms and I see beautiful read alouds happening. I know teacher read alouds are happening in your classrooms and in the classrooms you're responsible for. These are really a keystone of comprehension in K through 2, and they're happening. But what are the things that we can do? Because we're already allocating the time, we're already allocating the work. What are some things we can tweak to really up their effectiveness in our kids' thinking and our kids' vocabulary development? And here is what David Dickinson and his team, who have done research over years around the primary grades, K-1, and even home relationships, here is what they have found are the fundamentals for a read aloud. They have to support an instructional thematic unit of study. We can't just be pulling books off the shelf because it's my favorite book and I always read this. It has to be built into that thematic unit of study. Books should be read and reread just like we do as parents with our kids. You know, how many times, think about you and how you've read books to your kids at home and you've read them and reread them. But so often in schools, we are on this treadmill and where they're like, I don't have time to do that. I've got to, you know, I read this book today and tomorrow I'm going to a new book. All right. But good read alouds involve, because they're complex, because they're rich, they involve opportunities for multiple reading, and the children certainly love to hear a book reread. And you can read them, here's the other key, large formats, which is where we do a lot of our read alouds, but don't forget the small group format. Having books then on the shelf so that the kids can actually read it later during maybe station time, during private reading time. We also need to make sure that our discussions include open-ended questions that address character motivation, relationship of plot sequences, how sequences relate to each other, how they are chains of events, and vocabulary development. There have to be strings of follow-up questions that provide the bridges that young children need to arrive at higher levels of thinking. We can't just ask a question and then continue reading and go to the next question, all right? We ask a question, we actually listen to what the kid said, and then we ask a follow-up question that takes it to the next level of thinking. And what we have found also is that the implicit management style increases time on task and engagement, and we'll say more about that at the very end. We also know that comprehension should consider what's happening before the reading, during the reading, and after reading. And this, you know, this is from a slideshow that Rebecca Silverman did this past summer at the International Literacy Association conference. But this is, you know, pretty traditional stuff. Before we certainly are going to introduce the text in a targeted way. We do not want lengthy conversations before we read the text. Beck and McCallum have found that doesn't work. That's distracting. We will preview a couple, no more than two, important words and concepts. During the reading, we're going to prompt children to ask and answer questions about the text, and then we provide the feedback and additional follow-up questions. And finally, We guide children to retell what was read, and we extend the learning via activities and centers. When we guide children to retell what was read, we are actually guiding the retelling, but we're also providing opportunities multiple times a week, at least twice or three times a week. Kids should have the opportunity to retell whatever story they happen to read themselves or what story was read to them, to retell that from start to finish. We don't want to rely solely on somebody saying, what happened first, and one kid says that, what happened next, a different kid says that, and what happened last, a third kid says that. We need for children to tell the text, the story, from beginning to end, a single child, and to do that in small group, in the small group setting. Now, when we talk about, you know, those, what's really given us the steroid effect? Well, it's the extension activities, it's the multimedia supports, and the opportunities to for kids to collaborate and talk with each other. And so these extension activities are the elaborated vocabulary development. And I'm going to go over a protocol in just a second that Beck and McCallan have developed that is very effective for Tier 2 vocabulary. One of the biggest things you can do to add steroids to your read aloud are to provide opportunities for children to talk about the read aloud in small groups. Doing that at least once a week with perhaps a group of children who are language reticent, English language learners, or have other language issues is very powerful. Working collaboratively with the English language instructor to get her to support that effort and have kids to do that is very powerful. Writing in response to text, using that gradual release of responsibility. I think too often we turn the writing over to kids too prematurely without having explicitly taught and compared to anchor text, without having modeling as a whole class, modeling sharing the pen, guiding in a small group. We often just teach a mini lesson and then say, now you do it. That is not enough for a six-year-old. And then engaging in project-based activities and theme-related stations. Those are all powerful, powerful things. I had such a treat. It literally brought me to tears. One afternoon, I had done some PD and was doing some classroom observations in a class, in a school. And then I had like 40 minutes at the end of the day before I was doing the professional development. And I walked into a kindergarten classroom, and the teacher was just finishing up the read aloud of that Frank Ash book about Moonshadow. And so she had done the read aloud. The kids got up and sort of were acting some of it out. And then, and this all happened in about 30 minutes. So she finished the book. That, you know, she read the book. They finished it. And then the kids went around to stations. Now, the read aloud was part of a larger unit on light and shadow. And I quick got out my phone and took the pictures of some of these stations. You have an article or a book chapter that is out of the book Best Practices in Early Literacy Instruction. It's a chapter that I wrote that is called Comprehension Instruction in the Primary Grades. And so, you know, one of the things I share is what she was doing. So she did the read aloud, and then the kids went to, there were like 8 stations or 10 stations set up in the room, and they went to one station. Now, these stations, they were doing the theme over the course of a couple weeks. So each day she did do a new read aloud, and then the kids went to a different station. Molly, if you can show that page now, page 186 from the article. And so you see here in this overlay what the exact activities were. The kids, you know, one group of kids was writing a response to the story, which was really writing a trait that described their favorite character in the book. You saw a picture of that. Then they did read around, one group was doing read around the room, and they had all kinds of poems about light and shadow. Another one was a computer station that was set to the ebook, Robert Louis Stevenson's My Shadow, and the students were echo reading the poem. And it just goes on and on. My favorite station was this categorization. And the children in the categorization activity, there was a light table, and they had all these little teeny shapes. And they had a sorting activity that had the vocabulary word opaque, translucent, transparent, and the kids had to sort the items by that terminology. And so I thought it was really an exemplar of what a read aloud is supposed to be, which is embedded in a theme and related to the science unit. Okay, Molly. And you all have this chapter and these individual activities. And again, the multimedia supports are very, very helpful and can provide additional, lots of good additional information needed for comprehending and remembering words and concepts. Really take advantage of these videos. And it's especially essential if you have children that you're working with English language skills. Excuse me. And these multimedia supports can be in the form of pictures, audio, video, and realia. And there's a website that Freddie Hebert has called Text Project, TextProject. And in text, if you can just Google it, and it'll take you right to it. It has a whole link. She has a whole library of pictures that could go with any content unit and any vocabulary word you're teaching. Wonderful resource. Another form of reading is something that's been around for a very, very, very long time. If you're a pre-K teacher, the dialogic reading by Whitehurst et al., Head Start, pre-K, this is a kind of reading acronym that, nowadays, it's, pretty much we know to do this. But this is a nice, but it is research-based. There's been probably 30 years of continuous research on dialogic reading. And they use the acronym PEER to remind teachers, and they also recommend that you train parents to do this at a parent workshop, to prompt kids as you're reading, evaluate the responses, expand the responses, and then to repeat what they've said, to sort of shape that conversation so that kids are becoming more eloquent and refined and expanding what they're talking about. Again, that expansion, the role of talk. And then crowd prompts. So these are some different kinds of questioning techniques that you can use to generate talk around a text. For all ages, the directed listening thinking activity has been also around for a long time and has very robust research around it. We will revisit this again next week when we're talking about guided reading. We'll do the DRTA. But if you're doing it as a read aloud, you divide the sentence, you stop intermittently, and then the kids make a prediction. The key to the DLTA, they have to justify the prediction. It's not just make a prediction, it's a guess. No, a prediction is not a guess. It's we are making and we're anticipating what we're going to be reading about or what's going to happen in this piece of text based on evidence. And what the kids must do is justify how they made their prediction when they make one. Then the students listen as you read the section of text, and then afterwards you verify whether the prediction came true. And it's also a summarizing or a taking stock. You're making sure that children are understanding that portion of the text. So you're not only verifying the prediction, you're really taking stock and making sure that there is a comprehension of what's been read so far. And then you simply repeat that for each section of text. Now, DLTA can be used for narratives or informational text. We do have Text Talk, which has become very, very prevalent now. And Text Talk is used for narratives, strong research base in grades K through 3. The article is available to you here. The original article. It's also in the. It's a Reading Teacher article, Beck and McCown by 2001. It's also in their very popular book, which the name of which is eluding me at this moment. But in Text Talk, you're reading complex text to kids. One of the things that really came out is they found that it's really important when you are doing that pre-reading conversation, limit the elaborations of background knowledge. Ask a prompting question to activate prior knowledge, but keep it very specific to what's going to be in the text. Making sure that you're doing open-ended, initiating, and follow-up questions. One of the benefits that they have found from using this technique is that it really helps kids develop their use, their understanding and use of decontextualized language. And because what you're doing in this read aloud style is you preempt the kids. You said, I'm not going to show the pictures until I'm going to give you a chance to actually make a picture in your mind. And then I'll show you the picture. All right. So you're really getting them to make meaning from words rather than over relying on the picture. This does not work. This is not the best technique to use if you have a high percentage of children who are English language learners, because they do need to rely on the pictures. And it's also very detailed. You would only want to use this technique about, I would think, once a week, all right, because it is consuming and and you're going to do the elaborated vocabulary development after reading, all right? So you would choose tier two words, which are used by mature language users that are not limited to a specific domain, okay? So the children, in other words, the kids know the concept, like amber. They know the word yellow or the word brown. That's what they would call it. But they didn't know the word amber, all right, other than as a girl's name. And so you're going to choose high utility words. And so some examples of tier two words. Okay, things like stroll, bray, sparkling. And so these are the words you would choose for elaborated instruction. And this protocol is an excellent vocabulary protocol, even if you're not using the whole Text Talk routine. This particular protocol is very, very useful. You describe how the word was used in the story. You give a child-friendly definition. And then you give some verbal examples of how to use the word in different contexts. And then you elicit verbal examples from the kids. And then you follow up by putting the words on some kind of a word wall so that kids would and you are reminded to use it for the multiple exposures. Informational texts raise a somewhat different demand. You want to expect and direct more conversational moves because the content is richer. So you need to count on stopping more frequently. You need to count on asking more questions and prodding more deeply. Because all the concepts, figures, diagrams, and tables need explanation. They need to be talked about. You need to attend to text structures. And really, with the youngest kids, not just teach, oh, I know this is an informational text because it has a table of contents, because it has pictures, because it has headings, but you need to, by second grade, you should be demonstrating and explicitly teaching kids how those features are in service to text structure, how they are in service to knowledge building and comprehension, in service to helping you remember and know what the text is saying. And then asking more how and why questions. And these are all the levels of kinds of comprehension that you want to make children are provided to engage with, the levels of thinking. These are the level of thinking that you really want to incorporate within this informational text read aloud. Now, the way you're probably going to prompt this kind of thinking is through good questions. Questions must be crafted in advance. I am a firm, and I know I have been teaching since 1976, and you know, I don't know of any other career that can provide such fulfillment and excitement 40 years down the road. I am as excited about teaching today as I was in 1976, and you know, that's wonderful. But I've been teaching reading that 40 years, and I wouldn't dream of picking a book off a shelf and just starting reading it to a group of children. Time and attention. You only have a limited amount of time and a limited amount of attention with these babies, with these young children. And so therefore, you have got to be very selective in which questions you ask. There are tons of questions you can ask about the good text that you're reading, but you have got to plan both the quantity and the quality of the questions that you are going to use. It's sort of like packing a suitcase. Yeah, I can ask all these, but I'm only going to ask a third of them, because if I ask too many questions, I have lost the children. I've lost their attention. If I don't ask high quality questions, then I'm not getting to the high level of thinking that I need to get to in a read aloud in this stretch text. And so therefore, I need to ask fewer questions so that we have time to get to the destination. Create scripts and post-its that you can reuse. It's going to take a lot of time for you to do that, and you have to do it at home. But do it in such a way that they can be reused, all right? And the story grammar elements and strategic processing, this kind of questioning provides the foundation for later explicit instruction in these particular areas, okay? So I have some examples. There's in your article that is from the reading teacher that I wrote on fostering inference generation with emergent and novice readers. There is a table that you can refer to now. Table one in the article on, I don't know what the page is of the article. It's table one, 386. And it talks about the different question types and gives you some examples for some good question types. And so these are actually, you know, this is to prompt students to do this high level kind of thinking. And then as children get older, as they move into first grade, as they move into, oh, great question, Michelle. Thank you so much. Story grammar elements are things like the setting, all right? And it's not so much so the story grammar elements are setting, characters, plot, episodes, resolution. Oh, I forgot problem. For example, a problem that would propel the story. And the problem might actually propel the episodes, all right? So those are story grammar elements. And I'll say those again. Setting, characters, problem, the problem that propels episodes in a plot, which are attempts to solve the problem, and then the resolution. And so those will propel your questioning. Later, when you begin explicit strategy instruction among your kids at the end of first grade and second grade, when they are now reading themselves and you're doing strategy instruction, basically, you're teaching them to do for themselves what you did through the read aloud, through your questioning. I hope that makes sense. Same thing with strategic processing. Visualization is a comprehension strategy that you're going to be likely to teach your second and third graders how to make a picture in your mind. Well, when you are working with pre-K kids and kindergarten kids and first grade kids, one of the things you'll say in questioning is you'll say, tell me what picture you made in your mind. Oh, what words in the story helped you make that picture? And so your questioning is really the prerequisite to this strategy instruction that you will provide down the road to your novice readers when they are reading text themselves. The inference article that you have really, I think, does a good job of explaining that, giving you some examples. And also, I love to do strategy instruction with and questioning with videos. And I mentioned that earlier, and in this inference generation article, you have a script that I have used. It's table 2, and it's a sample kindergarten lesson for the video, The Frog Prince. And it actually has examples of the questions that I asked at each stopping point in that story that was presented in a video format, and it gives you the website, you could actually use this yourself and develop some others just like it for your pre-K and kindergartners. Oh, here we go. In addition, so in questioning, if we're working with first, second, and third graders, one of the things that is the hardest strategies to teach kids is to actually help kids ask high-level questions themselves. You know, so often, you know, we know that it's important for kids to ask their own questions, all right? And I think we either end up hearing them ask low-level questions, all right? We have them asking gotcha questions. They ask something about some detail, like they're trying to trick somebody. Or they ask a very generic, routinized, parroted, I wonder question. We really want kids to ask thoughtful questions related, and if we're dealing with narratives, we want them to really be asking questions that show how characters change over time, that show how one plot episode leads to another. We want them to recognize even in informational text why is such and such important, or even in narratives, why is it important that such and such happened. And so these question stems can be put on a poster, and research by Rosenshine and Meister has shown that the best way to teach kids how to ask high-level questions is by not only modeling that ourselves, but by having a poster with these stems displayed. And we also always want to be asking kids, let's not forget about the themes and universal truths in a story, you know, especially if it's a narrative. And children are never too young to engage in critical literacy and evaluate, you know, author position. Whose opinion does this text represent? Why is the author using this kind of language? I heard a couple girls one year when we were working with some second graders, you know, they had read something that used some dialect. And one of the kids were used to participating in small group conversations. And one of the girls said, why did she use that kind of talk? And getting kids to, you know, and especially now with a Common Core, those are Common Core standards 4 through 6. Why is the author using language in specific ways? Many of these questions are standard 7 through 9, all right, as well. But these, our young children are not too young to begin to ask these kinds of questions and for us to model this during the read aloud, where we as sensitive experts are guiding and facilitating sensitive conversations. And now I'm going to close with another word about the implicit management style during the read aloud. This is by that work by David Dickinson. What he found was that the least effective, the least effective read alouds were dominated by teacher behaviors, not student behaviors, not Johnny crawling or tapping somebody with a pencil, but the least effective read alouds he found were dominated by teacher behaviors that disrupted comprehension, particularly behavior management prompts. And so one would ask, well, what am I supposed to do? What he found is that the most effective read alouds were dominated when teachers used implicit management. You know, being enthusiastic, being positive, eye contact, questioning, being expressive and really dramatic. And the other thing I would add to that, and then we're going to have time for questions. The other thing I would add to that is I was working in a kindergarten classroom, and I walked in, and there were two teachers in the room, and one teacher was doing the read aloud, and the other teacher was walking around. And I, when we debriefed, I asked about why the teacher was walking around, and she said, well, it's for the management. And I said, would it be possible for you, have you thought about dividing the class in two groups and each of you taking a group? And then you'd be doubling the conversation and you would be not having the management problems if you have two groups of 10 instead of a group of 20 5-year-olds. And they said, well, we don't have duplicate copies of the book. And I said, well, you know, what's nice is that if you do that, you are cutting your work in half and you're doubling the conversation and interaction that children get to have. So it's a win-win situation. So, you know, the management is also an issue in which we can, by tweaking some things, increase the power of the read alouds that we're currently doing. So now I would like to, you know, I hope, you know, I'm going to open it up to questions for now also. So I hope you'll type in some questions and have some live conversation exchange. And I have also put up here, you know, some goals for November 9th that I would like you to try before we regroup next. You know, we're coming back together. I hope I'll see all of you next week as well, because this really is just, I think, such a compelling topic that we don't hear and share enough about. So please feel free to type in some questions that you have or comments that you have or suggestions that you have about things that have worked on your own read alouds. Okay, so I hope I'll see some of you typing. In the meantime, I'll start talking about next week. I would like, you know, I just believe so strongly in the power of a small group discussion after a read aloud. And so I would like to challenge each of you to conduct a 10-minute small group discussion following a whole class read aloud with 4 students who rarely or never volunteer to talk during a read aloud discussion. So I would like to challenge you to maybe increase the likelihood of that happening in your class in a small group format with those kids who need to share and are too insecure to share in a whole group. It would be great to give them the opportunity to do a follow-up. Also to select 2 priorities for your own professional growth, or to sort of consider thinking about maybe tweaking yourself in your own read alouds that you're doing in those areas where you said no or some. What would you do? What priorities would you like to make between November 14th and December 23rd to really refine your practice or the practice of the teachers who might be under your care? So I'm still not seeing anybody typing. I know this was, you know, I'd love to hear. I really like to have your feedback and, you know, and have you participate. You know, I like for this to be very interactive. Conversation is the key to comprehension, and it helps me know that that I'm not here by myself. So I like hearing what you have to say.
Okay, looks like we have a couple people typing. I just posted the link to the evaluation, so before you leave, if you grab that link, it will come to you via email as well. And another fabulous presentation. Okay, thank you.
Well, Molly, I want to thank you. For those of you who have been with us for many of our webinars, we will be together next week, but I believe, Molly, is this your last webinar with us?
It's my last one with you. I have two more with the TAC, and then I'm heading off in another direction, but it's been a pleasure.
Well, I just want to give you my gratitude. I could not have ever done these webinars without you. I just want to thank you so much for all the support you have provided to me and all of our participants out there. I always feel confident, as I know you participants do, that if ever there's a glitch, Molly is right there to support us, and we're back up and running. So, Molly, you will be greatly missed, but you really have been such a big part of our webinar.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Good. So I see some people typing. They're typing. And please, I do encourage you to do the survey. You know, your feedback is truly. Natalie, that is a concern. I think you'll be really interested. Our third webinar is very cutting edge, very cutting edge. Nobody else is talking about what does comprehension intervention look like in K1 and 2. And so I hope you will be there for that third one, because I will be talking exactly about some of those students who really, that we can tell, they haven't even started reading yet. They're not novice readers. We can tell from the read alouds, from some of the other language activities. Often the speech and language teacher is the first one to pick up. The speech and language teacher is the person I call the jewel of the school. And I hope you'll encourage some of your speech and language therapists to join us, especially that last week, because so much of the comprehension in the young children can be detected through speech and language and through the read alouds. And so I am imploring you to make sure that you are here on the third webinar, and so that you can provide some good feedback to us about your experience in these areas, because that is exactly what we're going to be talking about. And some of those issues like show up, you know, certainly in the classroom as well. And so what there are things, as I said, you know, that kind of little small group conversation is one of the first things that people can do when they begin to notice that maybe children are having difficulty understanding and participating in the read aloud that we're doing. So, okay. Now, I thought I saw that someone, Dawn, I thought I saw, oh, there we are. Some specific strategies to use with the lower levels English language learners. I use pictures, putting pictures in order for a text. Dawn, I recommend that you look up some of Rebecca Silverman's articles. And if you'll send me your email, I can actually send you some of them. So Rebecca Silverman does some fabulous work, and all of her work is with comprehension vocabulary in English language learners. She does fabulous work that you would be very interested in. And also in my book, chapter 2 is totally about that topic. It goes into a great deal of detail about that. So I encourage you to email me. You know how to contact me. And I encourage any of you who have questions or would like some individual feedback to about your read alouds, to feel free to contact me via email. I'm always available to you, because, you know, this is just a little I guess it's just a little taste sampler, really, of all the good stuff that's really out there. I think we have another minute left. Good, Andrea. I hope all of you will return next week. We'll be talking about shared reading and small group guided reading and how to use those formats to enhance comprehension. The shared reading and small instructional group reading groups. Well, thank you, everyone. Andrea, I know you're still typing. I'm not sure whether this just shuts off. I know we have until 5:15. I'm not sure whether the service itself just shuts off.
No, it auto-extends, so we're good. So if we want to answer Andrea's question,
okay,
and then we can.
Good, good. Yeah, so. Okay, so I thought Andrea was typing. Did it take a second delay? Oh, there. Oh, wait. Oh, no, I thought. Well, I'm not seeing what Andrea typed, but I do encourage, thank you all so much for being with us this afternoon. Please fill out the survey. Please fill out the survey. And please, I hope I'll see all of you back with us next Wednesday afternoon and bring some of your colleagues with you. That would be great.
She keeps cutting in and out, so I'm not sure if she has a question or not. I'm going to end the recording.
Okay, Andrea, if you would like to ask me your question or make your comment, you can feel free to send that directly to me with email. Yes, as Molly said, we're not sure why it keeps cutting out, whether there's something with the connection that might be going awry. So.
Okay, and if you'd bear with me a moment, Dr. Stahl. We'll...
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks, everyone. Hope to see everybody back on the 9th.